Hello everybody and welcome to this video, which is kindly sponsored by Squarespace. And today I'm going to show you how quick and easy it is to edit things, because you might have done something and then decide you don't like it so much. So here's a very early picture page I set up on British Cruisers pre-World War One, and as you can see, originally I had it set up to display each of the pictures at a fairly large scale, but in high detail that can cause loading issues. So you can edit the gallery, but what you really need to do here is edit the section. So I'm going to see if I put the column number up to 3, then I can play with the spacing. So you can see how the photos are either not spaced out at all, or they are. I think the default of 20 is quite nice. And then you've got the various ways that you can insert it. So I think the full bleed is better. It makes more use of the overall space. And just like that, I've turned what would be a clumsy series of very large photos you have to scroll through quite a bit to find what you want, into a nicely laid out set of photos. And now that I know that, I can just go back into the World War One era section, which as you can see is laid out as 2 photos, and set it to full bleed, set it quickly to 3 columns, set it to 20 spacing, and now that is consistent across the board. Nice and easily done with Squarespace. Very easy to make any edits that you need. So if after all these little mini tutorials I've been doing, you think you could build a website for maybe ideally naval history purposes, but you never know, you might want to do it for some other reason, then head over to squarespace.com/Drakenefell. You can get a free trial, and once you're ready, that little link will give you 10% off your first website or domain. So thanks once again to Squarespace for sponsoring the video, and on with the main show. Right. Hello everyone, once again, we are back at Chalk, and someone with far more money than sense is flying a helicopter in, so I apologise if you can hear that in the background. But I'm here with Dave Allen.
Hi guys.
And we're going to have a look at a rather interesting cannon display, because if you go on, well, to be honest, the few Age of Sail preserved ships like Constitution or Victory, they do have a lot of guns, but they're in their historical place. So you go on the lower gun deck of Victory, lots of 32 pounders. But if you want the carronade, you have to go on the upper deck. Whereas here, we've got them all in one place along with a bunch of different shots. So I thought, let's have a quick look around. You can get a good idea of all the range of guns you might find on a Georgian era warship. So I guess we'll start off with this one.
So this one is an 18 pounder, fairly indistinguishable from a 24 pounder, to be fair. Rolling gun carriage, this is brand new. Mm-hmm. And this gun actually you will find on Victory in numerous forms, because this is taken from the actual mould that was made to replace all of the iron guns on Victory with GRP guns, which is what this is, due to the weight. So this particular gun will be found on the upper and second gun deck. They are the standard lighter gun that the Royal Navy used. Also, down, if you go down through the ratings, first rate, second rate, third rate, and even down to frigates, this type of gun would be used as one of the main armaments used on the vessel, primarily used to fire round shot, but has the ability to fire other types of shot, which we'll cover in a minute.
So Victory, of course, on the upper gun deck, she flirts back and forth between 12 and 18 pounders, doesn't she? Depending on what time period. And of course, she starts off in commission with 42 pounders on the lower gun deck, like her predecessor, which is now a wreck at the bottom of the channel. But by the time of Trafalgar, she has 32s, which is why they have 32s on her now. And well, speaking of 32s.
Yeah, the one next door. So this is, as you can see, considerably larger than that one. This is the long 32. It's a beautiful weapon. It's used on the lower gun decks because of its weight. It has a huge range. Can outshoot this one by at least 200 metres plus. Also uses round shot as well as other types of ammunition. The mainstay of the British forces. Actually can outgun most French guns purely through not just the calibre and the powder content, but by the training of the crew. It can outshoot through timing because the crews are taught to live fire as part of their training, as opposed to blank fire, which a lot of the French would do. The other problem that the French Navy have got, first of all, they cut the heads off all their officers at the beginning of the revolution. Secondly, they're bottled up in all of the harbours. So when they're blockaded, they can't get out into the channel to do any practice whatsoever. And so the English have a British, I should say, have a proper advantage over retaining the French fleet in port.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons they go from the 42 pounder down to the 32 pounder, isn't it? Because they found the 42 pounder is a bit awkward, bit heavy to manhandle in the first place because the gun is bigger and heavier, but also 30 pounds, 15, 16 kilos, you can reliably lift and carry and load that kind of ammunition quite rapidly. Whereas a 42 pounder, you're up to 20, 25 kilos there, or something in that region, depending, because obviously they're all slightly different, the cannon shot. But, well, much as I hate to bring modern health and safety into it, 20 kilos is supposed to be the upper limit of what you're supposed to regularly handle in the workplace. There is a certain reasoning for that. And if someone's shooting at you and someone says, here, take this 20 kilo lump of iron and stuff it in the gun, you could be forgiven for tripping.
Which
was a bit of a problem if you're carrying the thing. And I noticed you've got this really nice display of different kinds of shot.
It's trying to explain to people the two thoughts of warfare. So one was to disable the ship by removing its driving gear, its sails, its rigging, its masts, its yardarms. And the other was to sink the vessel by basically breaking the hull. So round shot can do both jobs, but it's a round ball made of iron, 32-pound ball, a rather large charge of gunpowder. It is possible to skip these balls across the surface of the sea. One of the things that you would like to do if you wanted to hit below the waterline is get these things to actually move and hit the waterline right at the level of the sea, punch a hole through it, which will then break the timbers, and that would mean that what would happen is you would be able to fracture and break the hull, and the water would go in, and the crew would have to then spend most of their time trying to pump the water out. The amount of damage that ships could sustain is quite unbelievable when you look at it. And in the Victory in particular, there's an interesting walkway on the waterline that's the carpenter's walkway, where the carpenters and his mate would walk around when a shot had come through and try and plug the holes with either sacking or what's called oakum, which is a mixture of old rope and tar, and that would hopefully slow down the rate of infill of water so you could pump it out. They do have water pumps, but they're manually operated, and if you're in the middle of a battle, that's quite difficult to do.
A bit distracted by all the shooting.
Do you want to cover the other types we've got?
There's loads. So we've got
this one here. I can't pick it up because it's boiling hot in the sun. I do apologise. This is chain shot. Two cannonballs joined together with a chain. As that comes out of the gun, it would rotate in the air and cause a soaring action for whatever it hit, be it a spar or a mast. We've got different elements as well. We've got this one is quite interesting. This is sliding bar shot. Does exactly the same thing as a solid bar shot, which is that one, again used for wrecking the spars and the masts and ripping the sails. As it expands, it makes a bigger jagged hole in the sail. The wind does the rest, and hopefully the wind will not be able to power the ship, and the enemy ship will come to a standstill. That's quite difficult to make, and so they also use this thing. Oops, move that one out of the way. This one is split bar shot, exactly the same thing, much easier to make. Goes into the gun as a solid cannonball. As it comes out, it will open out under centrifugal force and go through the sail. These are all basically anti-movement weaponry. We do have other strange things. I don't know if you can point your camera straight down. This weird thing here. That's spider shot. And so those blades sticking out would be razor sharp. As that came out, it locked and basically flew through the air circuit in a circle, and those blades would cut the rigging to the sails, causing the spars and the sails to become unattached or crash to the deck and cut through things. If anybody is in Weymouth Harbour, it's a fantastic maritime history place. That's where that came from. That's a real bar shot.
Real historical one.
Did you want to feel the weight of it? Be careful with your back.
Yeah, that's that's a fairly hefty lump, isn't it?
Yeah.
Make a good barbell for getting fit.
And then we talk about anti-personnel. So we're talking about sweeping the decks, doing damage below decks. Most of this weaponry would be pushed in front of a round shot. So the round shot is loaded after the charge and a wad. This would then be pushed out by the force of the round shot, but you can fire it individually. These are sabots. So that's a wooden plate with the ammunition attached to it. This is grape shot. This is a different version, tied up in a linen bag. This is case shot. This is particularly nasty. It's a cutaway section of a small, thin tin case filled with musket balls. That would do more damage on being fired than an entire regiment on a battlefield. So there's as many musket balls in there as there would be in the firing line of one of Wellington's regiments.
Just all being delivered from one point.
From one point, and it would basically fill the deck with lead. If you can't afford that, because that obviously costs a lot, then the people used to use langrage, which is scrap metal, in a canister. Again, the canister would disintegrate. That metal turns into lethal shrapnel and would just shred anything in front of it. We've got this separate bar, which is quite hot. Mm-hmm. That could just be fitted into a gun loose. These big guns, you need a big bundle, but it's really for this one.
Okay.
So this is what we call a deck sweeping swivel gun. It could be elevated up into the air to shoot at the fighting tops, or it could just be turned and sweep the decks, normally on the top deck, at poop deck or the forecastle deck, but to sweep the enemies just prior to you boarding, going over on your boarding planks.
So that would then give you the advantage, because obviously if you're prepared to board, you've got everyone up and ready in your boarding party, and then even if the enemy has seen you and gone, okay, we're going to get our own counter-boarding party up, you blast out a bunch of these, because obviously you have more than one, cut down a bunch of them, and now you have the numerical advantage, and presumably the people who haven't been killed have taken cover, which means you can cross over without people cutting you down immediately.
And if they move, of course, our Marines are there to pick them off, much as the French are doing the same thing. The problem with the French fleet is that it's not particularly well commanded. It doesn't do a lot of live practice, so it's at a disadvantage. Plus, because they're allied to the Spanish, their ships aren't quite as manoeuvrable. So although Nelson effectively allows the French and Spanish fleet at Trafalgar to basically cross his T by sailing directly towards them, what they don't know is exactly what he's got in mind when he breaks through their line. And as we all know, that's when the real carnage starts. And it starts with a very important gun, of which I have an example right next door.
So this one's considerably larger in the bore.
It is. This one's a 68-pound carronade. It's quite short. It's about half the length of a 32-pounder, although it's double the bore. And this was made by the Carron Ironworks in Scotland, but it was not designed for the military. It's actually designed to be put on board some form of merchantman. Its idea was to smash the deck of any incoming privateer and hail the crew trying to climb aboard and take your ship by piracy, and just evaporate them in a hail of lead and iron. The problem with it, although it is cheap and lightweight, is it has a difficulty of retaining and staying on its carriage due to the recoil being unable to be absorbed with wheels. So it doesn't have wheels. It cannot be wheeled back and under its own weight absorb the energy. It slides. So this bit here will actually slide to the rear, and it'll hit the backstop, held in place with ropes. But they had a habit of breaking the ropes and then flipping upside down and falling off the carriage left and right. And it could kill the crew as much as do the damage to the enemy. Initially rejected because it was too short a range by the military. Having seen the devastating effect it did on close range, they then decided to try them out. There were carronade vessels, only armoured carronades. They were basically rejected because they didn't have enough ability to engage the enemy at distance. So all the enemy had to do was stay further away and pound the ship into pieces. But up close, there's nothing quite like this. We always relate a little story when basically the Victory broke the line at Trafalgar. The Bucentaure was one of these ships. I think it was to the starboard side of Victory. And as she went through the gap between that and the next Spanish ship, I think it was, Victory heeled, and so the starboard deck was lowering. And as it lowered, this gun was fired. The ball went straight through the rear of the ship, through the stern, and it tore through the entire gun deck, and I believe it ended up at the bow end of the gun deck. Mostly, about 75% of the guns were put out of action in one shot. It also was triple loaded, so it had possibly langrage, case shot as well. All of that, plus the wood splinters. We're not talking about little pieces you get stuck in your finger. These things are the length of your arm, flying in all directions at about 100 mile an hour. And at the range that that was shot, which is probably less than about 50 metres, the carnage must have been unbelievable. And that's just the first gun. Every single gun on the starboard side went through the same place into the Bucentaure. And so you can see that the advantage immediately gained by Nelson's manoeuvres would, in effect, win the battle with the first shot, although that is a bit of an exaggeration.
Well, yeah, because there's a story that's gone around since that point at Trafalgar, which has always talked about a captain of the Royal Marines who was at the bow of Victory, seeing Bucentaur approach, and has just gone, how can we increase the lethality? And supposedly stuffs a keg of 500 musket balls down in front of the gun.
Case shot.
So that would have actually then been case shot. So presumably at that point, putting it in context, someone's probably double shotted it, which would have been standard practice. Yeah, and someone's just going, oh, hang on a minute.
There's some
shotgun
more room.
Time.
Yeah. As long as it's held in with a wad.
Yeah.
And that's the significant part about loading a cannon. When you load a cannon, there are definite bits of the process you need to do in the right order. So the first thing you do is obviously wet mop the barrel to cool any burning embers down. Then you would worm it out. And then you would dry mop it, because wet gunpowder doesn't work. Then you would load a cartridge using the ladle or spoon. Then you would put a wad in, and that's to contain the explosion so that it can push the ball out and not just send flame out the barrel. Next, you would put your ammunition in, and then, of course, your second wad. That's important because, as we know, ships move on the ocean, and as Victory healed, if you hadn't put a wad in front of it, then it would just roll out. And that would be really embarrassing.
Yeah.
And then finally, of course, you would then fire the gun by piercing and priming the cartridge through the back end, through the touch hole, and then pulling a lanyard, and that would set off a flint, which would strike the frizzen. Spark would ignite the priming powder down the tube and into the main charge, and off she goes. There was also something called hot shot, not used at Trafalgar, as far as I'm aware, but hot shot is red hot cannonballs heated up in a forge. Now, if you just roll one of those on top of a wad on top of gunpowder, then you're going to blow your gun up. But if you put another wad soaking wet, you have a certain length of time until the hot shot will basically cause that to steam and go through. So there's an opportunity then to use hot shot, which when embedded in an enemy vessel will actually set fire to it. And I believe that happened at several engagements when they were attacking fortresses on the land.
Yeah.
The fortress would use it to drive away the ships. And I believe Napoleon used it at Toulon.
Yeah, yeah, because obviously the other problem is just because, as it cools down, just because it's not red hot anymore doesn't mean it's not hot. I mean, as you said, like touching any of these, yeah, they're still pretty hot, and that's just sunlight, let alone residual heat from a forge. So.
Yeah.
If you get a red hot shot wedged in your timbers, everything catches fire, you put it out, you think, great, fantastic, I'll go back to fighting, and 5 minutes later, the shot just heated everything up and set it on fire again.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's really, really handy. A nice little compact display of the different guns you get in the Georgian Period Navy. Now, I believe you mentioned that you're associated with the Weymouth
Heritage Centre Limited.
Yes.
Is a not-for-profit company. We try to present Weymouth history. We're just starting this year to cover the maritime history, which is long and inclusive. It does include this period, Georgians. For those of you who don't know, Weymouth was visited in the summer by the king and his entourage and other people for his health. He suffered from pyphoria, the king's madness, and healthy exercise, sunlight, and swimming in the sea, as well as drinking seawater, was supposed to help. Whether the salt water intake was anything that made you any better, I don't know. And it's why Weymouth becomes famous, and it becomes a holiday resort. Loads of people want to follow and see the king, so it becomes very, very rich off the back of royalty. That continues into the Victorian period, Victoria and Albert following his footsteps. And Weymouth is so full of history. We've got so much that it would take at least a 3 hour long documentary to cover it. It starts in the Middle Stone Age.
Wow, that's
because of the Isle of Portland. So, if you're ever in town, look us up, weymouthheritagecentre.co.uk, and book a tour.
Yeah, and if you want, there's the wreck of the pre-dreadnought HMS Hood, which is out there in the harbour if you can spot it. Weymouth, of course, if you've watched the channel at all so far, you'll probably remember me mentioning it quite a lot. Extremely important in the age of sail as a south coast port, and even in the age of steam, once people start moving more towards Scapa and Portsmouth, it's still very, very important because it's a little bit closer up the channel than Devonport. So in that early period of steam, when they're worried about, oh, are the French coming from Cherbourg, Weymouth is actually a better place than Devonport, Plymouth, and to repel.
That is the reason why the Channel Fleet was based there, because it is within fighting distance, and there is a series of forts put along the coast, one of which is the Nose, and that covers Weymouth Bay and Portland Harbour. They even built a high angle battery on the island, which is now open. It's been done up and looked after by a charitable group, and that was using plunging fire like the mortar, basically to pierce the deck of the French ship. The French ship La Gloire was a brand new invention. It had iron sides, but it still retained a wooden deck. Even though it was powered by sail, they thought that how do we get through and past the iron? Cannibals bounce off. It was bad enough in the 1812 war against America, where the Americans built the ships using a very strong oak called white oak, and they thought that they were clad in iron. But this actually was, and so plunging fire will pierce the deck from above and the shells will go off below deck, causing carnage. Never actually put to the test, and very quickly we move on to fully armoured ships and the age of steam and propellers. So paddle steamers replaced by propellers, and then we enter the ironclads. Just a little bit of clarity, Nelson's tactics must have been good because Admiral Jellicoe used it in 1916 at the Battle of Jutland. Still the same, break the enemy line.
We've got an APC coming past us.
Oh, that's a little machine gun carrier. Yeah. So, head of the festival, going for a little ride there, James Holland, great guy, worth having a look for.
Yeah, and so if just for reference, for those of you who may not be familiar with the south of England, if you end up at Tankfest, which a lot of you I know who are watching this probably will do, that's up in Bovington. You're only about 20 minutes, half an hour down from Weymouth. And to be perfectly honest, if you want to stay at Tankfest, Weymouth's probably one of the better places to get affordable accommodation anyway. So you might as well extend your visit, have a chat to the guys at Weymouth Heritage Centre, and have a look at the naval history that's around there as well. Because there is a lot of it. As you said, you know, it goes all the way back to the Stone Age. It's been a very important Royal Navy base for a very long time. And if you're lucky, you will occasionally see the Royal Navy still around because they fly helicopters, put ships in.
Yep. And of course, we won't mention the ship that's in the harbour at the moment, but it's full of oil that shouldn't be there.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Come
down and see this either at the next Chalk Festival or I presume you're at a number of other history
festivals
as well.
It depends. Not this year. We're not taking these out next any other time this year, but we're looking to put them on display. So just check the channel out and find us on Facebook, find us on the website. And if you want to go on a tour, we're available for private bookings, not just the bookings you see for everyone else. And if you're into maritime, World War II motor launch called the My Girl, operated by Coastline Cruises. We're doing maritime tours on board. That was involved in supplying Portland Harbour and the Breakwater forts throughout World War II.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.